Greetings and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. Today on the show, we have with us Dr. Cornelius G. Hunter, a graduate of the University of Illinois, where he earned a PhD in biophysics and computational biology. Dr. Hunter is adjunct professor at Biola University and author of the award-winning book, Darwin's God, Evolution and the Problem of Evil. Some of his other books include Darwin's Proof, as well as Science's Blind Spot. Dr. Hunter is very interested in the theory of evolution, including both its scientific and theological or historical aspects, and his blog, darwins-god.blogspot.com, is a great place to stay up to date on a lot of the latest events in the debate over Darwinian evolution and intelligent design. So, Dr. Hunter, thanks for coming again on ID the Future with us today.
Thank you, Casey.
Well, Dr. Hunter, you've been writing a lot on your blog lately about the issue of serendipity. I know that we talked about this a little bit on a previous edition of ID the Future, but I'd like to expand on this because I think it's very important for our listeners to understand both what is wrong with the modern synthesis of Darwinian evolution, as well as where it's going, why some scientists are now abandoning Darwinian thinking. So what can you tell us about the issue of serendipity and what it means for the modern theory of evolution?
Well, serendipity is a really interesting aspect of evolutionary theory, and it does go back to the New Synthesis. So let me explain that just briefly so we get the historical context. Darwin didn't have an explanation for biological variation in his theory, and he kind of had some thought experiments and some ideas and some notions that he played with. And there was also, it was well known among breeders that biological variation was limited. You could only do so much to a species. So this was kind of important for Darwin. Really didn't have an answer, and it really wasn't until almost a century later in the 1930s and 40s when evolutionists were delighted to provide the final piece of the puzzle. They called it New Synthesis, and what they said was, okay, evolution operates on these alleles, the different versions or flavors of genes, and it's the changing gene frequencies or changing allele frequencies that are a key part of this biological variation. They cause the biological variation. And then you have occasional mutations thrown into the mix to create new alleles. So that was the essence of what this biological variation was to come from. And evolutionists proclaimed this as that big missing piece of the puzzle, and they were very triumphant about it. But in all of this, what was often unspoken was it is predicated on the existence of genomes, the DNA molecule with its double helix, genes, chromosomes, the transcription and translation machinery that take those genes and operate on them, the DNA code, populations that are going to have these variations. All of these things have to already exist. It's been sometimes called the existence problem, but it is mostly not talked about. So in other words, the New Synthesis was predicated on an enormous biological world, which was not only intricate and finely tuned, but it was evolvable according to this New Synthesis theory. It provided for the basis for evolution to occur. Now, of course, evolution had to have created all these things. So the genomes, the DNA molecule, this double helix, the genes, the chromosomes, the transcription and translation machinery, all of these things that the New Synthesis was predicated on were to have been created by evolution. This is self-referential. So that's what philosophers call a theory that calls on itself. So evolution created incredible mechanisms and machines, which then caused evolution to occur. It's circular. Computer programmers call it an infinite loop, where a function calls itself. So the only way out of this is for evolutionists to just call upon basically serendipity or sheer dumb luck. Evolution just happened to create these various wonders, which then allowed for more evolution to occur. It didn't have to occur according to evolutionary theory. There's nothing in evolutionary theory that mandates or explains this. It just happened to happen. So there's a tremendous amount of serendipity. That's the cost that evolutionists paid when they provided that last piece of the puzzle, and they explained where variation comes from for natural selection to work on in the New Synthesis.
So why is serendipity a problem for Darwinian evolution, Dr. Hunter?
Well, since the New Synthesis, this hasn't gotten any better. In fact, it's become worse. The New Synthesis, again, it was the idea of gene frequencies changing and occasional mutations. That hasn't worked out very well for a couple of reasons. It would have been nice for the origin of life research to kind of show how all of those key components, the genomes, the DNA molecule, the genes, the chromosomes, all those, the transcription and translation machinery, the DNA code and so forth, that could have arisen quite reasonably from basic physics and chemistry. That would have kind of come out from the origin of life research. That would have been a nice result for evolutionary theory. It didn't. So origin of life research has failed to figure out how life could have arisen, let alone all of those incredible molecular machines and mechanisms. So that's one problem that the new synthesis faced. The other problem was that even if all of those things were to have somehow evolved, it has become increasingly clear that it just doesn't cut it. Changing gene frequencies and mutations don't do the job. And even evolutionists in later decades admitted that there must be some other mechanism that play and matching mutations or something. So big problems for the new synthesis. And what it ended up doing was calling upon yet more mechanisms to make evolution occur. These are still not sufficient to explain the evolution of the species, but what they ended up doing is drawing upon increasingly complex and sophisticated machinery beyond what we already talked about. Let me give you a list of some of these that you see in the literature. Horizontal gene transfer, epigenetics, directed mutations, transcription factors and regulatory networks, spliceosomes, alternative splicing schemes, microRNA exchange between cells. The list goes on and on of these incredible mechanisms and designs that to a biologist just sound like topics in molecular biology. But evolutionists have literally claimed each and every one of those as mechanisms of evolution. Evolution occurred via those mechanisms and machines. So we already talked about the genes, the genomes, the transcription and translation machinery, the DNA molecule, and so forth. Now add to that all these incredible higher order machines to that list. It's become much, much worse since the new synthesis. Now, there's another aspect of the serendipity beyond everything I've said. We're not done yet. Evolutionists have also discussed exaptation. So this is an explanation for how complex designs in biology evolved, according to evolutionists. What they say is, well, a complex design in biology has subcomponents, and these subcomponents would have evolved on their own for other purposes, and then just as luck would have it, they fit together to form a different new machine. It would be like taking a bunch of old automobile parts and they fit together to make a spaceship. Obviously, it's pretty unlikely, but that's where evolutionists have gone in order to explain some of these complex machines and designs in biology. So it's a completely different kind of serendipity that evolutionists have introduced into their theory. So serendipity is lurking all over the place, both in these mechanisms that evolutionists claim to have caused evolution, and in the way that complex designs would have come together by exaptation. The problems have become much worse since the new synthesis in the last century.
And of course, Dr. Hunter, we talked a little bit about the issue of exaptation in our previous interview. This is what the biologist Andreas Wagner has been talking about quite a bit lately, proposing that exaptation is one way, one of these other mechanisms that can be used to explain how complex features can evolve. Are you persuaded by exaptation as a potential way of explaining the origin of biological complexity?
No, it's obviously a low probability, astronomically low probability explanation. But what's interesting about what Wagner is doing now is he's doubling down on exaptation, if you will. So before Wagner, exaptation was kind of a one-off. Evolutionists used it sparingly, didn't really want to dive into it too much, but where they face challenges, they would use exaptation. How did ATPase evolve? Well, you know, it's okay, these different subcomponents evolved for different reasons, and then they came together. You use it once in a while, but you don't talk about it too much. Well, what Wagner is saying now is, well, that's actually the rule. That's what happens most of the time. And so the serendipity is just skyrocketing. It's just becoming so incredible that if you had a trouble with the ATPase coming together just by sheer dumb luck, you're really going to have trouble with where evolutionists are going now. So it's a fascinating aspect of evolutionary theory that doesn't get talked about a lot. I believe it's another substantial, significant scientific problem. Evolutionists certainly do not really reckon with the extent of the difficulties that they have introduced. They've had to introduce these in order to try and explain how evolution would work. They have had no other choice. But this is what has happened. Instead of facing the problem squarely and admitting that predictions of the theory have been failing one after another, they're propping it up with just-so stories. And the serendipity is just very unreasonable at this point.
Dr. Hunter, I'm glad that we're kind of linking serendipity and exaptation in the same conversation here, because I really see exaptation as no better than requiring or referring to sheer dumb luck in how you explain something. Because really, exaptation is saying you have a part that does one job, and it just so happens, really for no reason at all, that same structure is very good at doing some entirely different function. So it's simply luck and nothing more than that, that exaptation invokes to explain how complex features evolve. And sure, as you mentioned, perhaps it can be an occasional rare way of explaining something, but exactly as you've noted, it's really becoming the exception that is swallowing the rule right now, where biologists are saying, oh no, this is how it's done all the time, essentially. And that, I think, does not make for a very compelling theory of evolution.
Right, Casey, and you captured it there with your phrase, no reason at all. And that's the point that is so often lost. There is no reason why these subcomponents would fit together. There's no natural selection involved there. It's just, it would just have to be dumb luck, as you say. So very interesting problem for evolution.
Well, Dr. Hunter, I think we're about out of time here, but thank you so much for coming on the show to talk to us today about the issue of serendipity and exaptation. And I do think that as evolutionary scientists are increasingly invoking exaptation, that's just more and more of a signal that they're theory, their way of explaining things is not working. And I think it's another sign that intelligent design is a viable scientific hypothesis. Be sure to check out Dr. Hunter's blog at darwins-god.blogspot.com. I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2013. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.